This is Audible.
Oshet Audio presents Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. Written by James Patterson and Chris Tebbets. Read by Brian Kennedy. Includes a bonus PDF of illustrations by Laura Park.
Dedicated to Lexi Winchester and Dr. Rebecca Vandervogert, head of Palm Beach Day Academy. J.P. For Jonathan. C.T. Chapter 1. I'm Rafe Khachaturian, tragic hero. It feels as honest as the day is crummy that I begin this tale of total desperation and woe with me, my puking sister Georgia, and Leonardo the Silent, sitting like rotting sardines in the back of a Hills Village Police Department cruiser. Now there's a pathetic family portrait you don't want to be a part of, believe me. More on the unfortunate Village Police incident later. I need to work myself up to tell you that disaster story. So anyway, ta-da! Here it is, audiobook fans, and all of you in need of AR points at school. The true autobio of my life so far. The dreaded middle school years. If you've ever been a middle schooler, you understand already. If you're not in middle school yet, you'll understand soon enough. But let's face it, understanding me, I mean really understanding me and my nutty life, isn't so easy. That's why it's so hard for me to find people I can trust. The truth is, I don't know who I can trust. So mostly I don't trust anybody. Except my mom, Jules. Most of the time, anyway. So, let's see if I can trust you. First, some background. Check out picture number 2 in the PDF to see me arriving at prison, also known as Hills Village Middle School, in Jules' SUV. The picture credit goes to Leonardo the Silent. Getting back to the story, though, I do trust one other person. That would actually be Leonardo. Leo is capital C, crazy, and capital O, off the wall. But he keeps things real. Here are some other people I don't trust as far as I can throw a truckload of pianos. There's Ms. Ruthless Donatello, but you can just call her the Dragon Lady. She teaches English and also handles my favorite subject in 6th grade, after-school detention. Also, Mrs. Ida Stricker, the vice principal. Ida's pretty much in charge of every breath anybody takes at HVMS. Then there's Georgia, my super nosy, super obnoxious, super brat sister, whose only good quality is that she looks like Jules might have looked when she was in 4th grade. There are more on my list, and we'll get to them eventually. Or maybe not. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work out. As you can probably tell, this is my first full-length audiobook. But let's stay on the subject of us for a little bit. I kind of want to, but how do I know I can trust you with all my embarrassing personal stuff? Like the police car disaster story? What are you like? Inside, what are you like? Are you basically a pretty good, pretty decent person? Says who? Says you? Says your rents? Says your sibs? Okay, in the spirit of a possible friendship between us, and this is a huge big deal for me, here's another true confession. Picture 6 shows what I actually looked like when I got to school that first morning of 6th grade. We still friends? Or are you out of here? Hey, don't go, all right? I kind of like you. Seriously, you know how to listen, at least. And believe me, I've got quite the story to tell you. Chapter 2. The Middle School Max Security Prison. Okay, so imagine the day your great-great-grandmother was born. Got it? Now go back another 100 years or so. And then another 100. That's about when they built Hills Village Middle School. Of course, I think it was a prison for pilgrims back then, but not too much has changed. Now, it's a prison for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. I've seen enough movies that I know when you first get to prison, you basically have two choices. One, pound the living daylights out of someone so that everyone else will think you're insane and stay out of your way. Or two, keep your head down, try to blend in, and don't get on anyone's bad side. You've already seen what I look like, so you can probably guess which one I chose. As soon as I got to homeroom, I went straight for the back row and sat as far from the teacher's desk as possible. There was just one problem with that plan, and his name was Miller. Miller the Killer, to be exact. It's impossible to stay off this kid's bad side, because it's the only one he's got. But I didn't know any of that yet.
"Sitting in the back, huh?"
he said. "Yeah," I told him.
"Are you one of those troublemakers or something?"
he said. I just shrugged. I don't know. Not really.
"'Cause this is where all the juvies sit,"
he said, and took a step closer.
"In fact, you're in my seat."
"I don't see your name on it," I told him. And I was just starting to think maybe that was the wrong thing to say when Miller put one of his extra, extra, extra large paws around my neck and started lifting me like a 100-pound dumbbell. I usually like to keep my head attached to my body, so I went ahead and stood up like he wanted me to.
"Let's try that again," he said. "This is my seat. Understand?"
I understood all right. I'd been in 6th grade for about 4.5 minutes, and I already had a fluorescent orange target on my back. So much for blending in. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a total wimp. Give me a few more chapters, and I'll show you what I'm capable of. In the meantime, though, I decided to move to some other part of the room, like maybe somewhere a little less hazardous to my health. But then, when I went to sit down again, Miller called over.
"Uh-uh," he said. "That one's mine, too."
Can you see where this is going? By the time our homeroom teacher, Mr. Rourke, rolled in, I was just standing there, wondering what it might be like to spend the next 9 months without sitting down. Rourke looked over the top of his glasses at me.
"Excuse me, Mr. Catchadorian,
I told him.
"Gesundheit,"
someone shouted, and the entire class started laughing.
"Quiet,"
Mr. Rourke snapped, as he checked his attendance book for my name.
"And how are you today, Rafe?"
he said, smiling like there were cookies on the way. "Fine, thanks," I answered.
"Do you find our seating uncomfortable?"
he asked me. "Not exactly," I said, because I couldn't really go into details.
"Then sit down now!"
Unlike Miller the Killer, Mr. Rourke definitely has two sides, and I'd already met both of them. Since nobody else was stupid enough to sit right in front of Miller, that was the only seat left in the room. And because I'm the world's biggest idiot sometimes, I didn't look back when I went to sit in my chair, which is why I hit the dirt as I went down. All the way down to the floor. The good news? Given the way things had started off, I figured middle school could only get better from here. The bad news?
I was wrong about the good news. Chapter 3. At least I've got Leo. Do you remember that nursery rhyme about Jack Sprat and his wife? How neither of them ate the same thing, but between the two of them, they got the job done? Same deal with me and Leo. Except the fat and the lean are words and pictures. Make sense? I do the talking, and Leo takes care of the drawing. Leo speaks to me sometimes, but that's about it. Conversation just isn't his thing. If Leo wanted to tell you your house was on fire, he'd probably draw you a picture to let you know. The guy is about as talkative as a giraffe. Oh, I've got 1,000 of them, ladies and gentlemen. Say hi, Leo. See what I mean? Besides, if it's true that a picture's worth 1,000 words, then my buddy Leo has more to say than anyone I've ever met. You just have to know how to listen. Bottom line, Leonardo the Silent is my best friend, at Hills Village or anywhere else. And before his head gets too big to fit through the door, I should say there's not a whole lot of competition for that title. I'm not exactly what you might see in the dictionary when you look up popular. Which brings me to the next thing that happened that day. Chapter 4. Rah, rah, rah. Yada, yada, yada. After homeroom, they'd usually ship us off to first period, but today was special. There was going to be a big school assembly to kick off the year, and everyone was all excited about it. Of course, by everyone, I mean everyone but me. They herded us all into the gym and sat us down on the bleachers. There was a podium on the floor with a microphone and a big sign on the wall. Welcome to HVMS. The principal, Mr. Dwight, got up and spoke first. After a speech that went something like,
Welcome, blah, 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 lunch, blah, 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 and without further ado, blah.
He brought out the cheerleaders, who brought out the football, soccer, and cross-country teams, who brought everyone to their feet, yelling and screaming. Of course, by everyone, I mean everyone but me. The only things missing were the circus tent and a couple of dancing elephants. After that part, Mrs. Stricker announced that anyone who wanted to run for student council representative should come down to the microphone and address the assembly. 5 or 6 kids from every grade stood up, like they'd been expecting this. I guess Mr. Rourke might have said something about it in homeroom, but I'd been too busy waiting for Miller to drive a pencil through the back of my neck. I hadn't paid attention to too much else. They started with the 6th graders first. We heard from 2 bozos who I didn't know, then a guy named Matt Krusik, who ate his own boogers until 4th grade, and then,
Hi, everyone. I'm Jeannie Galetta.
About half of the 6th grade, and even some of the 7th and 8th graders started clapping right away. She must have gone to Millbrook Elementary, because I'd never seen her before. I went to Seagrave Elementary, where we chased rats in gym class, and most of the kids got free lunch, including me.
I think I'd be a good class representative, because I know how to listen, Jeannie said. And there's nothing more important than that.
I was listening. I was listening! She was pretty, for sure. She had the kind of face that you just want to stare at for as long as possible. But she also seemed kind of cool. Like she didn't think she was better than anyone else. Even if she was.
I have a lot of good ideas for how to make the school a better place, she goes on. But first, I want to do one thing. She leaves the mic and comes over, right in front of where I'm sitting. Then she looks straight at me and says, "Are you Rafe?" Suddenly, I'm feeling about as talkative as Leo, but I manage to spit out an answer. "That's me," I say. "Do you want to maybe split a large fries in the cafeteria later?" she asks. "Sure, I'm buying," I say, because there's a $20 bill in my pocket that I just found that morning. "No," she says. "The fries are on me." Meanwhile, everyone's watching. The band starts playing, the cheerleaders start cheering, and Miller the Killer chokes to death on a peanut M&M. Then I win the lottery. World peace breaks out everywhere. And Mrs. Stricker tells me that based on my all-around awesomeness, I can just skip sixth grade and come back next year.
Rafe Cachadorian, please report back to us.
"So I hope you'll vote for me," Jeannie was saying, and everyone started clapping like crazy. I never even heard most of her speech, but she definitely had my vote. Chapter 5. Those oh-so-cruel rules. The next girl to speak at assembly was Lexi Winchester. I knew Lexi from my old school, and she was a real nice kid. Still, Jeannie Galetta had my vote. Sorry, Lex. Once the speeches were over, I thought the assembly was done, too. No such luck. Mrs. Stricker came back to the microphone and held up a little green book so everyone could see it. "Can anyone tell me what this is?" Stricker said.
"Yeah," Miller the Killer mumbled somewhere behind me. "A complete waste of time."
"This," Mrs. Stricker said, "is the Hills Village Middle School Code of Conduct. Everything you need to know about how to behave at school and how not to behave is right here in this book." A bunch of teachers came around and started handing out a copy to each student in the gym. "When you receive yours, open up to page 1 and follow along with me," Stricker said. Then she started reading. Really slowly. "Section 1. Hills Village Middle School Dress Code." When I got my copy, I flipped all the way to the back of the book. There were 16 sections and 26 pages total. In other words, we were going to be lucky to get out of this assembly by Christmas. "All students are expected to dress appropriately for an academic environment. No student shall wear clothing of a size more than 2 beyond his or her normal size." Help! That's what I was thinking about then. Middle school had just started, and they were already trying to bore us to death. Please, somebody stop Mrs. Stricker before she kills again! Leo took out a pen and started drawing something on the inside of the back cover. Stricker turned to the next page and kept reading. "Section 2. Prohibited items. No student shall bring to school any electronic equipment not intended for class purposes. This includes cell phones, iPods, cameras, laptop computers." The whole thing went on and on and on and on. By the time we got to Section 6, Grounds for Expulsion, my brain was turning into guacamole, and I'm pretty sure my ears were bleeding too. People always talk about how great it is to get older.
All I saw were more rules and more adults telling me what I could and couldn't do. In the name of what's good for me. Yeah, well, asparagus is good for me, but it still makes me want to throw up. As far as I could tell, this little green book in my hands was just one long list of all the ways I could, and probably would, get into trouble between now and the end of the school year. Meanwhile, Leo is drawing away like the maniac he is. Every time Stricker mentioned another rule, he scribbled something else on the page in front of him. Finally, he turned it around and showed me what he was working on. Rules are made for breaking. All I could think when I saw that picture was, I want to be that kid. He looked like he was having a way better day than I was. And that's when I got my idea. My really stupendous, really, really big idea. It came on like a flash flood. This was the best idea anyone had ever had in the whole history of middle school. In the whole history of ideas. Not only was it going to help me get through the year, I thought, it might also just save my life here at Hills Village. That was, if I had the nerve to actually try it. Chapter 6. Eureka! Did you ever hear the expression, breaking every rule in the book? That was it. That was my big idea. Break every rule in the book. Literally. The way I saw it, the HVMS Code of Conduct could be my worst enemy here at school. Or if I played it right, I could turn it into my best friend. Sorry, Leo. I mean my second best friend. All it would take was a little bit of work. And a ton of guts. Maybe 2 tons. Leo knew exactly what I was thinking. The idea had come from his picture after all. Go for it, he whispered. Just pick something out of the book and get started. Right now? I whispered back. Why not? What are you waiting for? He said. And I guess the answer was 2 tons of guts. I just kind of sat there, frozen. So Leo flipped open the book for me and pointed to something on the page without even looking down. When I saw where his finger landed, I almost started having a heart attack. I can't do that, I told him. What if someone gets hurt? How does this hurt anyone? Leo said. Except maybe you. Somehow that didn't make me feel any better. Listen, Leo told me. You're never going to be one of those people. He pointed at all the student council candidates and jocks and cheerleaders sitting on chairs that had been set up on the gym floor. But this, he said, thumping the rule book with his pen. This is something you can do. I don't know, I tried lamely. Or, Leo said, you can keep going the way you're going, and every day can be just like this one. He shrugged. It might not be so bad. There are only 180 school days in a year. That did it. Okay, okay, I said. And even though my heart was pounding out the Star-Spangled Banner, I got up and walked over to where one of the prison guards, I mean teachers, was standing by the gym door. I need a bathroom pass, I told her. You can wait, she said. Section 8, Stricker boomed over the microphone. We're halfway there. Please, I said, trying to look as much like a pants wetter as possible. The teacher gave a big sigh, like she wished she'd been a lawyer instead. Okay,
5 minutes, she said.
5 minutes was more than enough. I went out to the hall and into the boys' bathroom while she was still watching me. Then I counted to 10 and stuck my head out again. Nobody was around. As far as I knew, the whole school was inside that gym. It was now or never. I sprinted up the hall, around the long way, behind the office, and then cut down another hallway, through the cafeteria, and into an empty stairwell in the back. By the time I found what I was looking for, I'd been gone only a minute or two. I stood there, staring at the little red box on the wall.
"Oh, Rafe,"
the fire alarm box called me. I could just hear Leo now, like he was right there.
"Don't think about it. Just do it."
I flipped the latch, opened the wire cage around the alarm box, and put my finger on the little white handle inside. This was what you call the point of no return. My mission, should I choose to accept it, and all that. Still, was I crazy? Was I completely nuts for thinking I could pull this off? Yes, I told myself. You are. Okay, I thought. Just checking. And I pulled the alarm. Chapter 7. Chaos. I'm not sure what the fire alarm sounded like in the gym, but it was about 10,000 decibels in that stairwell.
Wah! Wah! Wah!
I covered my ears as I sprinted back to the bathroom. The idea was to make it there before the teachers could get everyone lined up and marching outside. Then I could stroll out like I'd just finished my business and blend into the crowd. Turns out, I didn't need a plan. By the time I got anywhere near the gym, everyone was already running, walking, and for all I know, skipping in every possible direction. I guess Mrs. Stricker hadn't gotten to the part about what to do if a fire alarm sounds, Section 11. In fact, I could still hear her over the mic in the gym.
"Everyone, remain calm. Line up with your teachers and proceed in an orderly fashion to the nearest exits."
I'm not sure who she was talking to. It looked like the whole school was already out here in the hall, and in the parking lot, and on the soccer field, and on the basketball courts. I couldn't believe this was all because of me. I kind of felt guilty about it, but it was kind of amazing. To be honest, only half of that sentence is true. It was more like, I knew I should feel bad, but I didn't. Meanwhile, the fire alarm was still blaring.
Wah! Wah! Wah!
But it just sounded to me like,
Rafe rules! Rafe rules! Rafe rules!
When I found Leo outside, he gave me a big, double high five.
"That's one for execution and one for the idea," he said.
"I can't take all the credit," I told him. "The idea was half yours."
"That's true," he said,
and high-fived himself. Then he showed me his drawing again.
"Check it out. I made some improvements."
See picture number 16. I opened up my copy of the Code of Conduct and turned to Section 11, Rule 3. Students shall not tamper with smoke or fire alarms under any circumstances. Then I took Leo's pen and I drew a line right through it. That felt pretty good, too. One rule down and, well, all the rest to go. Chapter 8. My Home Page. On the bus ride home that afternoon, everyone was talking about my little fire drill. It was a rush, sitting there and knowing they were all talking about me. Of course, everything good has to come to an end. Before long, I was getting off the bus and walking through the front door of my house. Meet my future stepfather, also known as the low point of my day. His name is Carl, but we call him Bear. 2 years ago, he was just this customer at the diner where my mom works. Now, somehow, Mom has a ring on her finger, and Bear lives here with us. Ditka is Bear's lame excuse for a guard dog. Ditka knows all about attack, but not so much about down or stop. He usually tries to eat my face for an after-school snack.
Ditka, down! Down!
Bear said, coming out of hibernation as I walked in the door. Bear pulled Ditka off of me and then flopped back into his bear-shaped place on the couch.
Hey, Squirt. How was the first day?
He calls me Squirt. Do I even have to point that out? School was unbelievable, I said. I kind of, well, sort of met this amazing girl, and then I set off the fire alarm during an assembly. Okay, that's not what I really said, but it wouldn't have mattered if I did. Bear's not exactly a good listener.
Uh-huh,
he said. He reached up and stretched, his workout for the day.
Did you sign up for football yet?
Nah, I said. I took a couple of pudding cups out of the fridge and kept moving toward my room.
Why the heck not?
He yelled after me.
Football's the one thing you're actually good at.
Don't worry, I didn't forget I'm a loser, loser, I said as I zoomed down the hall.
Did you just call me a loser?
Bear roared back. No, I called myself a loser, I said, and slammed my door. Loser. Like I said, low point of my day. Bear and Mom had just gotten engaged that summer, over 4th of July. That's when Bear moved in. Mom asked Georgia and me what we thought about it before she said yes. But what were we going to tell her? You're about to get engaged to the world's biggest slug? I don't think she would have listened anyway. Now Mom was working double shifts at the diner all the time just to make enough money, and Bear was spending 99% of his time on our couch, except maybe to go to the bathroom or to collect his stupid unemployment check. Bottom line, my mom was way too good for this guy, but unfortunately, neither of them seemed to know it. Chapter 9. Check this out. Picture 18 shows what my room looks like. Cool posters, the latest video games and consoles, a pinball machine, bowling lane, sweet sound system, a drum kit, vending machines, pillow phone, the works. It's the one place at home I can kick back, be by myself, and do whatever I want. Mom says I keep it too messy, but the truth is, I just have too much stuff. Chapter 10. Check this out. Part 2. Okay, I might have been exaggerating a tiny bit there. Really, it's more like what you see in picture 19. Bare, cold, crummy, and falling apart. Just kidding. Kind of. Chapter 11. Georgia on my nerves. About 12 seconds after I slammed my door, Georgia came a-knockin'. She knew better than to just barge in. At least I'd trained her that much. Enter! I told her. She came in and closed the door right behind her.
What's going on? Why was he yelling like that? Are you in trouble?
She said. In case you're wondering, Georgia is 9.5 years old, in fourth grade, and 100% into everyone else's business. Go away, I told her. I had work to do. A mission to plan. Besides, since when do I need an excuse to not want my sister around?
Just tell me what he said, she whined.
Here. I gave her one of my pudding cups. He said, have a pudding cup, okay? Now get out. She gave me a look that was like,
I'm not stupid, but okay, I'll take the pudding cup.
And she didn't ask any more questions. Mostly, I can't stand Georgia, but I also didn't want her to get stuck in the middle of anything with me and Bear. She was still the kid in the family, after all.
Rafe?
What? I said.
Thanks for the pudding cup.
You're welcome. Now close the door. From the other side, I said, and turned my back on her like I expected nothing short of obedience. A few seconds later, I heard her leave. Finally, some peace and quiet. Now I could get down to work and really figure out where this whole mission thing was going to take me next. Chapter 12. So this is what motivation feels like. First of all, it needed a name. I thought about it for a while and came up with Operation RAFE, which stands for Rules Aren't For Everyone. I'd be the first kid to ever play Operation RAFE, but not the last. Someday, there could be Operation RAFE video games, Rafe Katchadorian action figures. Okay, so it's not the best action hero name. A movie version, starring me, and a whole amusement park called RAFE World, with 16 different roller coasters and no height requirements to ride any of the rides. The whole thing, RAFE Enterprises, would make me the world's youngest million-billion-trillionaire, or maybe some kind of heir that doesn't even exist yet. And I'd pay somebody to go to school for me. Meanwhile, I still had to finish inventing this thing. I decided that every rule in the Hills Village Middle School Code of Conduct should be worth a certain number of points, depending on how hard it was to break. Of course, this meant I could get into some serious trouble. So I decided to make that worth a bunch of points, too. And there would be bonuses for things like getting big laughs or if Jean Galetta saw what I did. Definitely that. I wrote it all down in a big grid, in one of the spiral notebooks Mom got me for school. What? This was for school. That's only part of it. There are a ton more rules in the code of conduct than that. 112 of them, to be exact. But you get the idea. After I was done writing it all down, I started thinking, maybe this whole thing needed some kind of major ending. Like, if Operation RAFE was going to get me through sixth grade, then I should have something big, no, huge, as a kind of final challenge before I could go on to the next level, which was seventh grade. I'd get Leo to help me, and it would be worth 500,000 points, way more than anything else. It had to be something everyone in school would see, and everyone would remember long after I was gone, but also very high risk. I'd have to earn those big points. I still didn't have any idea how I was going to pull this whole thing off, but it almost didn't matter. I just couldn't wait to start figuring it out. In fact, and please don't tell anyone I said this, for the first time in my life, I was actually looking forward to going back to school.
Chapter 13 Off and Running. The next morning, Mom set two plates of scrambled eggs in front of me in Georgia and then sat down to watch us eat. She loves to watch us eat, which I totally don't get. I mean, she works at a diner. She watches people eat all day long. "You were both asleep when I got home last night," she said. "I'm dying to hear about the first day of school. Tell me everything." I wanted to say, "Define everything." But that would have been like putting up a neon sign that read, "I have something to hide." The thing is, I don't like to lie to Mom. I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but she has enough to deal with. So instead, I shoved half a piece of toast and a bunch of scrambled egg into my mouth and started chewing as slowly as I could. That meant Georgia went first. Lucky for me, she talks a lot. I mean, a lot. If Mom hadn't cut her off, I might have gotten all the way out the door without ever saying a word. "How about you, Rafe?" she asked when Georgia finally took a breath. "What do you think of middle school so far?" "Well," I said, "it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like Leo says, not telling the whole truth isn't the same thing as lying." Mom's eyes got all wide, like I'd just sprouted a second head or something. "Who are you, and what have you done with my son Rafe?" she asked, joking around. "I'm not saying I love it." "No, but this sounds like a good start," Mom said. "I'm proud of you, honey. You must be doing something right. Whatever it is, just keep doing it." "Oh, I will," I told her, just before I shoved some more scrambled eggs into my big, fat, not quite lying mouth. Chapter 14 Rules Were Made for Breaking. The next few days were just okay. I couldn't top my fire drill from Monday, so I didn't even try. I just stuck to some of the beginner-level stuff to keep things moving along. On Tuesday, I chewed gum in homeroom, and Mr. Wark made me spit it out. 5,000 points. On Wednesday, I ran down the hall past the office until Mr. Dwight told me to.
"Put the brakes on there, mister."
10,000 points. On Thursday, I took a Snickers out in the library, and Mrs. Frurock, who's about 180 years old, told me to put it away. 5,000 points. I even took a bite before I did. But she didn't notice. No bonus. By Friday, I could tell something was missing. Just breaking the rules by itself wasn't going to cut it. I needed something more. I needed a boost in my game. I needed, wait for it, Leoizing. He caught up with me at my locker just before 8th period English, and of course he knew right away what I should do. Leo always does.
"You're just coasting," he said. "If you're going to play this game, then you need to really play it. So I'm going to change things up."
"You?" I said. "Since when do you make the decisions?"
"Since I came up with half the idea for this whole thing," he told me. "Here's the deal. It's 2:26. That means 49 minutes left in the day. That's how long I'm giving you to earn another 30,000 points.
30,000? I said. That was more than I'd made in the last 3 days combined.
"Yup. Otherwise, you lose a life," he said.
Hang on a second. Leo was going kind of fast, even for Leo. I have lives?
"Sure," he said, like it was obvious. "Three of them, to be exact."
"And what happens if..." I didn't want to say it. What happens if I lose all three lives?
Then you're a big loser. You don't get to finish the game, and the rest of the year will be about as much fun as a case of never-ending diarrhea,
he told me. Oh, I said. That's all, huh? Leo shrugged.
Gotta keep it interesting.
That's one thing about Leo. He definitely knows how to keep things interesting. I mean, it's not like just because he says something, I have to do it. But what would you rather do? Play this game by yourself or with your best friend? Yeah, I thought so. Okay, game on, I told him. I looked up at the clock just as the eighth period bell started to ring.
That's 48 minutes and counting, Leo said. Better get busy.
Chapter 15. Right and Wrong. I got to Ms. Donatello's English class with 47 and a half minutes left in the day. The clock was ticking. On my life. One of them, at least. After attendance, Donatello told us that we were going to read parts of Romeo and Juliet aloud in class. It was written by Mr. William Shakespeare, who I believe is famous for writing the most boring plays in the history of the universe.
This is a little advanced, Donatello told us, but I think you kids are up to it.
Obviously, she didn't know the first thing about me. Allison Prouty, who raises her hand for everything, helped give out the scripts, while Donatello told us what parts we each had. When she got to me, she said,
Rafe, I think you'd make a fine Paris.
And everyone in the room started laughing right at me.
Paris? I asked. Why do I have to read a girl's part? Paris is a boy, Donatello told me. He's one of Lord Capulet's best men.
Yeah, well, he probably still wears tights, I said, but Donatello ignored me.
Listen to the language as we read through, she told everyone. Notice how every line has 10 syllables. Notice the subtle rhyming? That's not easy to do. Nobody wrote like Shakespeare. Nobody.
And I thought, idea in progress. Please stand by.
Let's begin, Donatello said. Act 1, Scene 1.
It turned out that this Paris guy, he really was a guy, doesn't come in until page 12. That was good. It gave me time to work on my idea. Donatello probably thought I was taking notes like Jeannie Galetta and the other brainiacs, but I was actually hot on the trail of those 30,000 points. 10 syllables per line? Check. Rhyming? Check. By the time we got to my part, there were only a couple of minutes left in class, but I was ready.
Act 1, Scene 2, Donatello read. Lord Capulet and Paris enter.
Jason Rice was Lord Capulet, and he had the first line. It went something like,
But Montague is bound as well as I, and blah, blah, blah. For men so old as we to keep the peace, and blah, blah, blah.
I told you it was boring. Now it was my turn. I put my paper over the script and looked down like I was reading from the right place. Then, loud and clear, I read,
Excuse me, sir. There's dog poop on your shoe.